So it's my pleasure to introduce today Andrey Gromov, who's joining us via Skype from Stony Brook. So Andrey did his undergraduate in St. Petersburg before moving to Stony Brook, where I guess you're just finishing your PhD now, right?
Yes.
And I quote, Andrey has made contributions to a broad range of subjects, including quantum dynamics, integrable models, and quantum entanglement. So today, Andrey will tell us about this rapidly developing field of geometric responses in quantum fluids. So, Andrey, please go ahead.
Okay. Thanks for kind introductions. I'll tell you about the research that we did in the last couple of years with mostly my advisor, Sasha Abanov, here in Stony Brook, and about more recent work that we did in collaboration with a group from Urbana. The references are summarized on this slide, and let me just go directly to the plan of the talk. So first I'll remind you what fractional quantum Hall effect is, and a very successful analytical treatment of the fractional quantum Hall states that's known as flux attachment. The general point of the talk would be to correctly generalize flux attachment to quantum Hall states in curved space, and in particular, to find ways to extract stress-stress correlations, universal stress-stress correlations from the flux attachment. So the point usually of the flux attachment is to take an interacting system and reduce it to non-interacting. So I will also tell you how to compute the effective action, and I'll explain what effective action is for integer quantum Hall states in curved space. So this will be a perturbative computation. And even for integer quantum Hall states with filling one Landau level, we'll find disagreement with old results from 90s. We will resolve the disagreement, and the disagreement will be resolved by learning to correctly integrate over the statistical Gauss-Chern-Simons field. The previous works missed something that's known as framing anomaly. I'll explain what it is. It's a very interesting effect that basically says that quantum Chern-Simons theory has a non-vanishing expectation of the stress tensor. In other words, it's not topological, where a classical one is. And if I have some time, I'll tell you also about thermal Hall effect and how it's related to geometry, and clarify some misconceptions about thermal Hall effect that occurred in massively in recent literature. Okay, so first, fractional quantum Hall effect. The talk will get very abstract very quickly, so I want to put at least one picture with experimental plot on it. That's a plot where for the first time the fractional filling factor was observed by Tsui, Stormer, and Gossard in 1982. They subsequently got Nobel Prize for this. So let me quickly tell you what's on this plot, because that's the system that we are going to spend the entire hour talking about. So on this plot, you can see off-diagonal resistivity. And diagonal resistivity, rho xx and rho xy, plotted against the magnetic field. So classically, one would expect these dependencies to be straight lines. But at very low temperatures and very high magnetic fields, what happens is that at some very particular places in this plot, the plateaus are formed. At these plateaus, something very interesting happens. The diagonal resistivity drops to zero. It means that in this parameter range, the electrons inside of a semiconductor that is placed in an external magnetic field form a non-dissipative state. So diagonal resistivity usually implies dissipation, always implies dissipation. It vanishes, so there is no dissipation of the states. In fact, the integer plateaus at integer fillings, so filling is the ratio of density of electrons to magnetic field. At integer fillings, the plateaus can be explained by they are called integer quantum Hall effect. The very existence of plateaus is called integer quantum Hall effect, and this can be explained just by free fermion, free electron computation. At fractional filling, so when, let's say, density of electrons over the magnetic field equals to 1/3. This can no longer be explained by free theory because, filling 1/3 means that only 1/3 of available states on the first Landau level are occupied, and this configuration is highly degenerate. There are many ways to put electrons on the first Landau level so that they occupy only 1/3 of it. So therefore, free electron description is highly degenerate. In order to describe this response, in order to compute current response, one has to do degenerate perturbation theory, and this problem is intractable. But if one introduces interaction, the degeneracy is lifted, and the mechanism of the lifting of degeneracy is complicated and mostly unknown, to the best of my knowledge. So if one introduces interaction, the degeneracy is lifted, and one can, at least in principle, describe the states 1/3 and other fractional states. So the summary of this is that filling factors that are integer are a property of non-interacting system, and filling factors that are fractional are intrinsically interaction effects. So just by looking at this plot, we can write a few formulas phenomenologically. We can write that diagonal of diagonal conductivity, sigma h, also known as Hall conductivity, is quantized on the plateaus. I'm talking now, all the formulas that I will be writing for the entire talk are only referring to the state of the electrons on the plateaus. What happens in between is not described by those effective theories. So, Hall conductivity is quantized. The number of electrons is a fraction of the number of fluxes piercing the sample. So, this formula can be obtained by taking this relation, nu over 2 pi equals n over b, and integrating it over the entire sample. Also, diagonal resistivity is zero. So, whatever theory, effective theory we derive, must certainly satisfy all of this. And we will see that Trin-Simons does that. Okay, so this effect can be observed in various materials on various substrates. So it's actually a very reasonable question to ask. If we just know the quantized Hall conductance, are the states of the electrons the same or not? So this question can be formulated very sharply, and this is the subject of the work of last 5-10 years in topological phases. But to this day, we know that the answer is yes. There are different quantum Hall states that have the same filling fraction. So filling fraction is, of course, not enough to classify all possible topological states of matter. And things that people usually look to distinguish different phases of matter are statistics of gapped quasiparticles, so anions, for example. Or even more abstract ideas, such as degeneracy of the ground state of an interacting system on higher genus Riemann surfaces, or topological entanglement entropy. So those things I'm not going to talk about, but in my opinion, they have a significant disadvantage of not being related to any observable quantities. So in this talk, I am not going to attempt to classify anything. All I want to do is to introduce some measurable transport coefficients that are quantized, are universal, and take different values, even if the filling fraction is the same. We will introduce two of those. So the first one is known as Hall viscosity. It was first introduced by Avron, Zograff, and Zeiler in 1995. And the simplest way to explain it is that it's just a viscous analog of the Hall conductivity. For the Hall conductivity, one can write a very particular two-point correlation function of Jx, Jy, where J is electric current. This correlation function is known as conductivity tensor, and it's proportional to the Hall conductivity. A similar function, two-point function, can be written for the stress tensor. And generically, this two-point function of stress tensor is known as a tensor of elastic moduli. And there is additional parts of it that's known as viscous tensor, tensor of viscosities. So the viscous tensor has a very particular odd response that is given by this correlation function. And Avron, Zogorov, and Zeiler shown that this response is also quantized. It's not quantized exactly as Hall conductivity, but that's a detail. So the reason we call this response geometric is that the stress tensor can be thought of, well, is by definition really is a response to external strain. The strain and the strain can be modeled by external metric. So hence, stress tensor is a response to metric, response to change in geometry. So to give you some feeling what Hall viscosity is, I stole these two pictures from a paper by Matt Lapp and Taylor Hughes. So let me just first tell you what's usual viscosity. If you have two-dimensional fluid, let's say just water, very thin layer of water, you submerge a disk into a water. If you rotate disk, let's say counterclockwise, then water will resist it. There will be a dissipative viscosity acting in the direction opposite to the velocity of the edge of the disk. This kind of force is dissipative, and that's what we usually understand by viscosity. But there is another possibility. Another possibility is that the viscous force will act perpendicular to the direction of the velocity of the edge. And this is precisely what is described by the correlation function, Txx, Txy. Now, the direction so of this force, of this viscous force, whether it's going to be stretching the disk or pushing it or compressing it, is described by, let's say, magnetic field, if this liquid is an electron liquid. If you flip the magnetic field, the direction of this force will change. There are a few results already available on the Hall viscosity, actually quite a few. In addition to the original computation by Zogorov, Zeiler, and Avron, there is a more general computation by Nicholas Reed, who computed the Hall viscosity in the thermodynamic limit, so pretty much for any gap system. But in his formula, he has this object as bar over 2 that has a meaning of average spin density of particles that are constituents of the fluid. So this S bar has to be computed from the first principles from the microscopics. So if the microscopics is described by CFT trial states, then this S bar is given by sum of 2 terms. The first term depends only on the feeding fraction, and the second term depends on the neutral sector of the CFT. So, for example, if you are in a Ritter-Zeiss state, that is charge U1 sector times a ZK bar fermion CFT, then this H takes different values depending on K, depending on the representative of the in the Ritter-Zeiss series. So just this quantity already partially solves the problem of distinguishing various quantum Hall states with equal filling fraction. They will have different H, and therefore they will have different Hall viscosity. For integer quantum Hall, it's clear that S bar has a meaning of the spin, because every Landau level contributes to the Hall, to the S bar, and contribution from every Landau level is proportional to the angular momentum of the cyclotron motion of the electrons, which depends on which Landau level you're on. So first Landau level contributes 1/2, second Landau level contributes 3/2, etc. Okay, so there are a lot of things that can be done in the Hall viscosity about, can be said about it. And in this talk, we will compute it for variety of states. Okay, there is one more response that's worth mentioning, and it's known as thermal Hall effect, and it caused surprising amounts of confusion recently in the literature. So the definition of the thermal Hall effect is very simple. One can define an operator that's called thermal current, Jx and Jyq, and compute this two-point correlation function. This two-point correlation function turns out to be quantized. And there is a very general formula that was first derived by Kane Fisher and generalized by Reed and Green that relates this two-point function Kh to the central charge. The intuitive reason for this is that if you have a whole bar with H, then most of the energy is transported, or all of the energy is transported by the very light H degrees of freedom, and nothing happens in the gap bulk. Okay, so if I won't have time then to talk about it, I just want to say it on this slide. Thermal Hall effect is very different from the electromagnetic Hall effect. The entire thermal transport happens on the edge. For example, if you don't have an edge, then kappa H is not related to central charge and it's zero. If you look at the quantum Hall state on the sphere, kappa H is zero. It's not CR minus C left. On the other hand, if you would look at sigma, at Hall conductivity on the sphere without an H, you will still find a non-zero answer. Okay. There are other geometric responses that I will not have time to talk about. One can think about responses to torsion, which more physically means responses to various geometric defects in the crystal lattice or in the electron fluid. There are also responses to defects and changing in their geometry. So one can view, for example, boundaries of quantum Hall droplet as a defect. And when the geometry of the boundary changes, there are responses as well. But I will focus in this talk only on these two. So in this talk, we'll attempt to compute them, and the way to compute them will be to perform the flux attachment. So let me explain you and remind you what flux attachment is. So first, informally, if we have a strongly interacting state of electrons in two spatial dimensions in transverse strong magnetic field, we can do something very funny to it. So let me show you how flux attachment works for Laplace states. Suppose the electrons, interacting electrons, strongly interacting electrons, form a Laplace state. So for not even Laplace state, form a state with a filling fraction 1 over 2m plus 1. So to be more explicit, let's say 1/3. It means that the ratio of density to magnetic field, which is filling fraction by definition, is smaller than 1. So magnetic field is too strong in some sense. If magnetic field was a little bit weaker, then maybe ratio of density over magnetic field was 1, and we could treat it as an integer quantum Hall as non-interacting electrons. So this is the motivation to just take every electron and by hand attach to it several fluxes of some fake gauge field that will partially screen magnetic field in such a way that the total magnetic field sensed by electrons will be smaller, and electrons, or now electrons plus fluxes attached to them, will fill just one or several Landau levels, and one can use results for free for integer quantum Hall. So if you want, there is more pictorial way, you know, illustrative way to think about it. If you have filling 1/3, let's say, it means that there are three fluxes of magnetic field attached to every electron. We can by hand attach two more that are looking in the opposite direction, then the total number of the fluxes will be one. Electrons will fill, not now electrons, but the more complicated objects, electrons plus fluxes that are called composite fermions will fill one Landau level, and they can be treated as non-interacting system integrated out. And after that, after the free composite fermions integrated out, there is some additional averaging needs to be done to take into account that we added field that didn't really exist. So this is how one can think about it in a non-formal way. we just reduce magnetic field. By doing this, we reduce the problem to a free one, use the results for the free problem, and then take into account that we did something funny. A little bit more formal, there is a recipe. The recipe goes as follows. So first, let's look at the first formula. There is action that describes interacting electrons in curved space in external electromagnetic field. So in this formula, G is metric of space, can be inhomogeneous. R, large D is a covariant derivative that contains vector potential in it. Psi is a spinless, non-relativistic fermion. So you see the section is linear in time derivative and quadratic in space derivatives. In the second line, we have interaction. It's a generic density-density interaction with potential. And in the potential, in the flat space, I would write that it depends of x minus y. But here, to be covariant, I put geodesic distance. So this action can be shown to be equivalent, and I'll explain what equivalent means, to the following action, which I call x prime, and will refer to as flux-attached action. One has to take the original action, shift vector potential by statistical gauge field, and then integrate the statistical gauge field in the functional integral with the Trans-Siemens weight. There is a subtlety that arises in the curved space. The subtlety is that after you attached several fluxes of statistical gauge field to a spinless electron, it actually stops being spinless. It acquires a spin. And for this reason, it also couples minimally to spin connection, which I'll explain in more detail later. So that's why the vector potential is shifted not just by statistical gauge field, but also by minimal coupling to the spin connection. Okay, so these two actions are equivalent in the sense that their partition functions coincide. If the number of, if this p is integer in the last term. So on a flat space, it was shown by Lopez and Fradkin in 1991. And in curved space, it was more recently shown by Choyu and Fradkin. So the second we learn how to do flux attachment curved space, we should be able to compute stress responses. And that's what we're going to do. But before that, we need to solve a free fermion problem. It was solved before in the flat space, all two-point correlation functions of currents and densities can be were computed by, again, Lopez and Fradkin, also by Chen, Wilczek, and Witten. But in curved space, I'll explain how to do it now. So let's consider first free problem is given by this action. This action is just free non-relativistic Schrödinger field theory for spinless electron or for spinless fermion psi. It has various external fields turned on. So for example, G is metric. It is time-dependent and space-dependent. And there is external electromagnetic field inside of covariant derivatives D. This action is invariant with respect to changes of coordinates. So that's what I call, diffeomorphism invariant. This action also is invariant with respect to time-dependent changes of coordinates. Unfortunately, I will not have much time to talk about the symmetry. It's known as local Galilean symmetry or non-relativistic diffeomorphism invariance. So it's a little bit more than diffeomorphism invariance. It allows you to make coordinate changes that are parameterized by time. At different times, you can do different coordinate changes. An example of this is just Galilean boost. So it's a shift in, so it's a local shift of the coordinates, but it depends on time. So x goes to x minus vt. An example of such transformation. Okay, so that's action on a classical level. We are going to compute the effective action. Effective action is just defined by this relation. One has to take the matter action and integrate out the matter fields. So that's what's written in the first formula. Then effective action can be used to obtain various two-point and multiple-point correlation functions of densities, stresses, and currents. by taking variational derivative of the section with respect to external fields. Okay, so in order to integrate out the fermions, we need to fix background for the external fields. We will take metric to be flat, delta ij, it's a unit matrix, plus small smooth fluctuations, and vector potential will have a background magnetic field plus small smooth fluctuations. Background magnetic field also sets the length scale on the problem. If magnetic field is large, 1 over L squared is large, L squared is magnetic length and it's small. So we will compute the effective action as an expansion on magnetic length. Another way to say it is gradient expansion. The section, well, first of all, this theory is in 2 plus 1 dimensions. It has no anomalies. It also has no divergences. So the perturbation theory that we're going to do is actually finite. There's no tricks needed. If you're wondering what's this funny g to the power 1/4 in the path integral measure, it's just a trick to understand how exactly the measure of path integral depends on the metric. There is a redefinition of the measure or of the scalar product on the space of functions that allows to completely remove the dependence on the metric from the path integral measure and move it to the action. So if you're interested in this detail, you can ask me in private. Okay, so we will compute effective action only to quadratic order in order to be able to extract two-point correlation functions, because those are the ones that we're interested in. This amounts to computation of two diagrams with two external legs. Before telling you what the answer looks like, I have to tell you one more piece of geometry. This one is known as spin connection because I will use it to write down the answer. So the simplest way to think about it is the following. Suppose you just have Lorentz invariant theory in 2 plus 1 dimensions. The statement of Lorentz invariance means that you can make any rotations between space and time, or inside of space. So you can take coordinate x and rotate it into t, or you can take coordinate y and rotate it into x. What one can do is one can try to make the symmetry local. So one can perform a very quite usual procedure. When we have a global symmetry, such as rotations, and make it local. So one would allow to make different rotations in different points of space-time. Then, in order to account for this much bigger symmetry group, one has to introduce a gauge field that gauges the symmetry. And this gauge field is called spin connection. In 2 plus 1 dimensions, it has three components. Well, it has 3 times 3 components, 9. The spin connection that gauges rotations in Tx plane is called omega Tx, and it's a one form. The one that gauges rotations in Yt plane is called omega Ty, and similarly omega Xy. And that's what one has to introduce, for example, in order to put relativistic Dirac theory in curved space into 2 plus 1 dimensions. In non-relativistic physics, the situation is a little bit different. More or less by definition, non-relativistic means that the notion of time is global, well-defined, and absolute. One is not allowed to take space and rotate it into time. The notion of time should be time should always be treated separately. Therefore, there is no symmetry that rotates, let's say, x into t. Therefore, one cannot introduce the spin connection that has any time components. So the non-relativistic systems do not actually couple to the full spin connection, they only couple to the xy component, omega xy mu. So it's an external field that allows to make space rotation symmetry local. And this is the field that we will use in a second to write the answer. Again, before telling you what happens if we actually compute the fermionic determinant, I want to tell you the old argument of on what the answer should be. So if we have an electron fluid, it consists, quantum Hall effect, it consists of electrons that are spinning on the cyclotron orbits because they are in the magnetic field. Each electron has charge E, therefore it couples to electromagnetic field. But because they are all spinning in the orbits, there is an effective effective spin of this, or angular momentum of the cyclotron motion. And this is exactly the same as bar in the period before. So now one could ask, how exactly does spin changes if electrons, let's say, all electrons start flowing from left to right? So if there is an electric current, and when each electron is drifting in external electric field, the spin is all, the cyclotron orbit is always moving with it. So the transfer of charge is always accompanied by the transfer of spin, of this orbital cyclotron spin. So therefore, it is very reasonable to guess that whatever the effective action is, it just depends on the combination vector potential with the coefficient E plus the spin connection with the coefficient S bar. There are additional arguments why it should be this way. For example, the magnetic field that's made out of the spin connection, so D1 omega 2 minus D2 omega 1, is just curvature. And there is an effect that is similar to a Harunov-Bohm effect, but for curvature. The coefficient there is, again, will depend on spin. So the gravitational field omega, or spin connection omega, just acts very similar to the vector potential. The operator that's conjugated to the spin connection directly is known as spin current. And the statement that vector potential and omega enter this way is just the statement of the fact that spin current always accompanies electric current. So with this argument, Wen and Zi took the usual effective action for quantum Hall, which is Hall conductivity times electromagnetic transiemence. So this is not the statistical field, it's electromagnetic transiemence, external field. And replaced A as follows, and got a new effective action that now takes into account coupling to the curvature. And this gives most of the answer for the effective action, but there is an additional term missing that's not captured by this argument. And this term can be found by direct computation. So if we compute the effective action, if we integrate out the fermions, then generally the action looks like a sum of various terms. There are some terms that are linear in fields. There are terms that contain higher gradient corrections to the different transport coefficients. And there are transiemence terms that we collectively called as geometric. Now, this geometric action contains various transiemence terms. The first term is exactly the term that's captured by the Wen-Zi argument, A plus S bar omega, dA plus S bar omega, where S bar for, let's say, filling one has value 1/2 and filling fraction is 1. But there is an additional term that was unexpected, and it has form in case of integer quantum Hall effect with one field Landau level, it's 1 over 48 pi omega d omega. So it looks like there is an additional gravitational transiemence term that describes something else, not just the fact that spin current is accompanied by the electric current and vice versa. So we computed directly this C for one field Landau level and for n field Landau levels, and it smells a lot like central charge. Also, it's possible to compute it for Laplace function, and I cannot explain you at the moment how. But it's also published work, and it also equals 1, which again, all of this so far agrees with the notion, with an idea of this being equal to the central charge. Okay, now let me tell you what this effective action implies for the correlation functions. So first of all, let me quickly remind you how it works for just electromagnetic transignments. So suppose we're in a flat space, then this nu over 4 pi ADA is all of the effective action. There is nothing else in the lowest order in gradients. And just from here, taking variational derivative with respect to A0, we find relation between density and magnetic field. And taking two derivatives with respect to spatial components of A, we find conductivity tensor. The diagonal part vanishes, or resistivity rather, and off-diagonal part is quantized, or at least equals to the coefficient nu over 4 pi, but nu is quantized for integer, for non-relativistic free electrons, as we just proved by Z computation. Now, if we're in a curved space, that's the effective action, and some of the things are modified. So first of all, if we take variational derivative with respect to A0, we find that there is the density is now equals as before to magnetic field times filling fraction, but there is an additional contribution that goes and scales with curvature. If we take this formula integrated over the space, then we get the previous relation between number of particles and number of fluxes, but now there is an additional shift. But for example, if we're on a sphere, the shift is indeed describes an offset between number of particles and number of fluxes. So unfortunately, this formula is not very useful to try to measure S bar on experiment because this shift is of the order of 1, whereas n is number of particles, number of electrons in the sample, and that's unfortunately significantly bigger. But there is something more interesting that one can derive from this effective action, which is Hall viscosity. So in order to derive it, one has to take two variations with respect to metric. And omega is spin connection, so it's possible. It's Levi-Civita spin connection, so it's defined in terms of metric. If one does this, there is a usual relation that is derived by Reith that is actually also valid in curved space, because density in this formula is density modified by the shift. But there is an additional term that scales with curvature and the coefficient C over 24 in front of it. So a hand-wavy picture for such formula is the following. One can think of this C times R term as a finite size correction to the Reith's relation. So suppose you have a quantum Hall effect on a large sphere, such that radius of sphere is much bigger than magnetic length. Then, when you take thermodynamic limit, there is a possible finite size correction, which goes as radius of the sphere divided by magnetic length. This finite size correction this finite size correction is basically manifests itself in the second term. It's not a CFT, so of course it's not precise relation like we would get in CFT, but that's one of the ways to think about the origin of this term. Also, later I will argue that C that stands in this formula and C that stands in the thermal Hall conductance formula are the same C. So in fact, in order to determine central charge, we do not need to look at the thermal transport. All we need to do is to place a ground state or a physical system on a sphere and look at the Hall viscosity. Okay, so I will skip the higher order terms. So let me just tell you where we are at this point. We derived the effective action by direct computation, and we derived the effective action by the Wenzi arguments. This direct computation, which has been checked and cross-checked, gives a different answer. So it's reasonable to ask whether we can fix the Wenzi derivation to obtain the right answer. And it will turn out that we can. And the mechanism to get the right answer is called framing anomaly. Before that, I want to formulate the problem of the flux attachment as well, as sharply as I can. So as I said before, without carefully treating the transignment's gauge field, one gets inconsistent answers from the flux attachment. They're not just incorrect, they're really badly broken. So let me illustrate you how one can see that flux attachment doesn't work well. Let's consider the simplest Laughlin state with feeling fraction nu equals 1/3. As I told you before, it means that every electron has three fluxes of external field attached to it. And we can perform flux attachment to reduce it to non-relativistic electrons filling one Landau level in two different ways. We can either take every electron and attach two fluxes that look in the direction opposite to magnetic field. And in this case, we will have density that just equals to magnetic field, so filling fraction one. Or we can take every electron and attach four fluxes that look down. Then density will be minus the magnetic field. It is still integer quantum Hall effect at filling one, but it's those two states are obtained by parity from each other. So we take the same state, nu equals 1/3, one state, and describe it in two different ways. The answers and correlation functions that we should get from these two descriptions should coincide. Otherwise, what we are doing does not make sense. So let's do this. Let's integrate out the fermions using the formulas that I've shown you above. Those are composite fermions. Then we get this effective collection. It depends on the statistical gauge field. It has plus and minus in it. This plus and minus correspond to different routes of the flux attachment. And then we also want to integrate out the statistical field in order to get the responses. And if we do this, if we integrate out field little a, then we will get a piece that does not have this plus and minuses anymore. So it does not depend on the route that we took of the flux attachment. Here I restored general filling fraction. So it's not 1/3, it's 1/10+1. But there is a gravitational transiemence term that's left off. And this term depends, coefficient in front of this term depends on the route of the flux attachment, it seems. So just from this argument, there was a conclusion made in the paper by Choyu and Fradkin that the mean field theory does not capture correctly the coefficient in front of gravitational transiemence term. But it turns out that there is a subtlety. There is an error in this argument that I just presented. And the error is contained in the integration over the statistical gauge field. And I'll show you exactly where right now. So when a transiemence theory is written in a curved space, one cannot just integrate out field little a, statistical gauge field, by its equations of motion. One has to do a little better. And this was very carefully explained in Old Witten's paper. And I'll just give you the simplest example how transiemence theory works. So let's consider just U1 transiemence field theory. On a classical level, it's topological. It does not depend on metric. It has vanishing stress tensor. And let's attempt to compute partition function. So naively, one would expect that partition function is also topological invariant. But in order to consistently integrate in the functional integral over the gauge field, one has to take every gauge copy only once. So this means that one has to fix a gauge. Traditionally, we fix the gauge A0 equals 0. This gauge fixing has a problem. It depends on the choice of coordinates. If I transform coordinates, then A0 equals 0 will not be invariant. It will transform into some other gauge condition. So in order to carefully fix the gauge, in order for the partition function not to depend on the choice of coordinates, so the gauge fixing condition, it's nice to fix a gauge in a way that's coordinate independent. The simplest way to do this is to fix it by adding a gauge fixing term into the action. That upon integrating out the auxiliary field phi fixes the gauge condition to be covariant divergence of little a equals zero. That gauge fixing condition is coordinate independent. But when we did that, we had to introduce metric into the action. So the right formula for the partition function is this one, but now action depends on metric, and partition function also depends on metric. And the dependence on the metric is actually very concrete. It was also shown in Witten's paper. It acquires a face that has a coefficient in front. In the simplest example, sine of k, k over absolute value of k. In more general case, it's a Sugawara central charge of the Kac-Moody algebra that's made from the gauge group on the level k. And the term itself is gravitational transiments. So this phase is what we call framing anomaly. And this will contribute to the correlation functions of stress tensor. So now with this knowledge at hand, we can integrate out the, can solve the problem with the Laughlin function. We do the procedure I described before. We attach flux. We also rewrite the transiments integral by introducing an additional auxiliary field B. This is done simply because we want the transiments theory to be well defined. So the coefficient in front of the terms, transiments terms, must be integer. So before, if you remember, it was 1 over 2p. But if you write it this way, both terms have integer coefficients and the theory is well defined. Okay. Now, if we integrate out the fermions, psi, we get the answer that I wrote to you before that has inconsistency. But there is also a gravitational transiments term generated by the framing anomaly, with the coefficient signature of the matrix K, and this matrix is just a matrix in the A and B basis. This matrix K knows about how the flux attachment was done. So if we carefully now add S effective action with this anomalous contribution, we find that the dependence on the route of flux attachment is gone, and the central charge and the coefficient transgravitational Shearn-Simons term equals to 1 in both cases. So it turns out that this is a very general, effect. We can start from a fractional quantum Hall state, reduce it by flux attachment to integer quantum Hall state, and we must take into account framing anomaly when we integrate over the statistical gauge field, and then we always get correct and not and also self-consistent effective action. So now let me very quickly tell you, because I'm running out of time, how this fixes the problem with the Wenzi action. So Wenzi, of course, did not just take ADA and replaced vector potential by omega by the sum of vector potential spin connection. They did a little better than that. They wrote an effective topological theory and coupled it. So the little a say U1 transiments fields, dynamical transiments fields, and coupled them to external vector potential and spin connection, and then integrated them out. So this is how you get the first term, where vector potential is combined with spin connection. But they just forgot that when you integrate over Shearn-Simons field, there is an additional term that's generated. And this term has the signature of the K matrix in front of it. And for example, if we just take charge vector, spin vector, and K matrix to describe free fermions, integer quantum Hall effect, then we get exactly the right answer. So in fact, comparing this formula to our computation, we can conclude that free fermion computation of the effective action also computes the framing anomaly of the transiments theory. In this way of thinking, fermions are just treated as a natural regularization of the transiments. Transiments is generated by the radiative corrections. Okay, yes?
When you talk about framing anomaly, I mean, you Is it related also to the work lines of particles, like how you kind of point split or each kind of world?
There is a relation that I still don't know how to put in a precise form, but when you, I think I know what you're asking. So when you have, electrons spinning on a cyclotron orbit, or if you wish, if you took electron and you attached the flux to it, then the electron kind of stopped being a point particle. So its world line is not really a world line, it's a strip.
Yes.
And if during the electron motion the strip twists, then there is a phase that's related to central charges acquired by the wave function. But I do not see precisely the relation between what I just said and our computation. So,
flux, is that somehow formally, is that somehow taken into account or not? If you maybe go back to your slide with flux.
Which one?
The one where you attach flux with these two gauge fields, little A and little B. Yeah, this one.
Yeah, here.
Yes. So in S0 is this kind of framing.
So this S0 is just action for the for the non-interacting fermions. This S0 is just action for non-interacting fermions, and we integrate the field psi, and it generates the first term in the formula below. The last term, the framing anomaly term, is generated when we integrate fields A and B. So there are many ways.
Kind of a zero.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There is kind of zeroth order.
Yeah.
Which is that first you have to show that if you attach like odd number of or even number of flux quanta, then the action doesn't change, right? And
this partition function doesn't change.
That presumably, like, if...
So that's one of the reasons why I had to rewrite that ADA is full in this form, because if I take this as definition of the flux attachment, then I indeed can show that this way of writing flux attachment does not change the partition function. If I write it as just one transiemons with 1/2 p coefficient, then I have to add some additional gravitational transiemence terms in order to not change the partition function. Yeah. So this is the right definition of the flux attachment that indeed does not change the partition function.
Okay. And somehow the framing is hidden in S0, is that right? Or
the choice of framing, it's not explicitly in the S0, but physically you can think of framing as being set by the presence of the cyclotron orbits. When electrons spin on the orbits, there is a local basis, or if you wish, there is a natural orthogonal direction to the base manifold that's defined. So the cyclotron orbits naturally define the orientation of the base manifold of the space-time.
I see. Thanks.
Okay. So let me just very quickly say that the framing anomaly is necessary if we go to more complicated states, for example, Jane states. For Jane states, we do pretty much the same procedure with flux attachment, but we have to fill n Landau levels with composite fermions instead of one Landau level. And then one can compute their effective action again in two different ways. In one way, one can perform flux attachment and then integrate out n composite fermions and get an effective action and compute all kind of correlation functions. But one can do it differently. One can just start with the topological transiemence description. It will have its own K matrix and integrate out transiemence fields. And both cases both ways of deriving effective action agree, even only if the framing anomaly is taken into account carefully. If one doesn't, then one gets different effective actions by two equivalent approaches. And in particular, so these are the answers for the central charge for the Jane series. In this minus Jane series, this shift from of the central charge by two is exactly done by the framing anomaly, if one carefully looks through the computation. So let me just say one last thing about non-abelian states. So we can do this procedure even further. We can write down effective actions for non-abelian states, but we cannot do it with flux attachment anymore. We have to use something that's called a projective Parton construction. I cannot describe you this right now, but it's summarized in this in the paper by Winnenberg Ashley. And there they find, using the Parton construction, that the low energy H theory for the Ritz Rezai states is given by this coset CFT. Then we can use a very old construction by Moore and Seiberg that allows one to write down the Chern-Simons theory in the bulk that upon introduction of an edge produces you a given coset CFT on the edge. And it's done as follows. One has to take Chern-Simons term for the first Kac-Moody algebra. So that's in this formula, it's the second term for a bunch of abelian fields B, and subtract from it the Chern-Simons term for the second Kac-Moody algebra. Then upon proper choice of the boundary conditions, one can show that the H theory is indeed coset CFT. So if we now write this Chern-Simons theory in the bulk and integrate out all of the statistical fields, we obtain the value of the filling fraction, central charge, and this bar for the Ritz-Rezai states. In particular, notice that central charge is fractional. And the fact that this, the reason it's fractional from the point of view of this computation is that the non-abelian part of the bulk theory contributes, it does not interact with external gauge fields because it's impossible to write down an interaction of a UM cross a SP2K gauge field with U1 electromagnetic potential. So it does not interact with the electromagnetic field or spin connection, but it still generates a gravitational Chern-Simons term through the framing anomaly, and that shifts the central charge and makes it fractional. So I unfortunately don't have time to tell you about thermal Hall transport, but there weren't too many slides, so let me just quickly jump to conclusions. So a framing anomaly is not just a mathematical abstraction. It contributes to observable quantities. Moreover, it's necessary to be able to do flux attachment consistently on a curved space and compute consistently correlation functions of stress tensors and currents with stresses. It is also necessary to ensure that K-matrix effective theory is consistent with flux attachment. I think other are less important. So that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. So I think we can fit in another question or two. Maybe we can start with Max, see if you have any other questions.
Maybe a couple of small questions. So you were working in the continuum,
yeah,
right? So what happens, which of these quantities remain well-defined when you have a lattice?
That's the most difficult question usually. So thermal transport should be well-defined on the lattice because it's a consequence of time translation symmetry, and time is continuous also on the lattice. Hall viscosity, of course, requires the way defined that local rotational continuous symmetry. But as you can see, for example, the formula that relates all viscosity, the formula that was written by Reed, that relates whole viscosity to fitting fraction and conformal spin, it makes sense even if your theory does not have local rotational symmetry, because one can think of this H as being topological spin or being related to the topological spin that does not require any continuous rotational symmetry for its definition. So precise answer to a question is still under investigation. I don't think it's known, but I would say that at least maybe mod one, whole viscosity should be, or as this quantity S bar should make sense without rotational symmetry.
And another question that I had was related to the following. You were doing your flux attachment using kind of composite fermion picture.
Yeah.
But in free space, you can equivalently do things using composite bosons and composite boson condensation.
Yeah.
Can one do it in...
We did it and it never went to the paper. If you do composite boson, you're also fine. It's just there you will have to introduce a sequence, not to construct hierarchy states. You have to introduce a sequence of statistical gauge field and integrate them out one by one. And each integration generates a framing anomaly and generates a contribution to the central charge. So that can be done.
I see. And you get the same.
Yeah. Everything is consistent only if you add additional, only if you take into account this term that's generated by the transimons.
I see. Thanks.
Okay. Well, anything from the local audience here? I was just going to, maybe one clarification thing, this H that you have on the screen now, is this, I probably missed it, but can you directly relate this to the term you get in the quantum Hall sphere that's related to this, the radius? It's CR over 24. Is there a direct relationship between that central charge times the radius and the H?
Yeah, eta H equals to S bar over 2 minus C over 24 R over 4 pi.
And so that's directly related to the H is 1 over 1 minus 1 over K through some relation? You know, when you have the...
Oh, okay.
We have the viscosity of the edge, the whole viscosity out there from the edge.
Yeah, so this 1 minus 1 over K is hidden inside of S bar.
So it's in S bar, okay, so it's the additional...
Yeah. So let's say you compute whole viscosity on a sphere of radius 1,000 magnetic lengths and 10,000 magnetic lengths. Then you can subtract those two. The first term will cancel because it does not depend on the radius of the sphere. It's S bar over 2n. But the second term will remain. So if you see, so this is a way to extract central charge directly from the whole viscosity. You just see it, look at the scaling with the size of the system.
Okay, anything else from the audience? I think since we're a bit over, we'll thank you once more, Andre. And thanks again for joining us over Skype. And thanks, Max.
Thank you.
All right, catch you guys later.